This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Folks, it goes without saying, with all of the bad weather, just please slow down, take your time. Folks are confused. They may be coming upon serious puddling in the streets or flooded streets or otherwise. You don't want to be traveling at a pace that you're not able to keep your car in control, because it will just lead you to have a bad day, right? The moment in time that you cause an accident or you have damage to your vehicle, your day is shot. It's not going to be a good day. So just relax a little bit. Leave a little bit earlier. Give yourself some space. Give yourself some time. And just go about in a cautious manner. These storms will be off and on all day long. Heavy winds, possible hail. We've heard it all. We've been there before. We know how this plays out. Just take some time, a deep breath, and relax. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll talk about Louisiana legislative issues. Dr. Lucio Millay, director of LSU LCMC Health Cancer Center. May is actually World Cancer Research Month, and we'll talk about the Health Cancer Center and what they are looking at these days. Michael Heck joins us at 11. For the GNO Inc. segment, he brings with him a special guest, the CEO of Delta Utilities, and we'll talk about what they are up to. Joe Geruso joins us at 10:30. The Orleans Parish School Board declined to settle a lawsuit against the city of New Orleans as board members wait to see whether appeals court will approve more favorable terms, and we'll find out what is going on there. Looks like we're going to have a recount, right? Two-vote margin, jail tax passes. And there has to be someone from the parish that lives within the parish, a voter, and or a candidate. Well, there's no candidate here under Louisiana revised statutes that provide for same. And the recount shall be held for reasonable costs. The parish board decides the cost, and the amount needs to be available by noon yesterday, which, in fact, that was done by Danilo Augusta Feliciano of Burgundy Street. And the amount was $2,155. So that amount of money was put up and at the clerk's office, and it seems as though that the recount is going to take place in civil district court on May 8th, which is tomorrow, in the first floor courtroom, waiting to see what that time will be. I believe it's the Secretary of State that decides the time of the recount. So I got a text here from my Hurricane Katrina and post-Hurricane Katrina days. Stay home, play Parcheesi. That was some of the best advice I ever gave folks on about not going around joyriding out in the streets and everything else. And then that created the scoundrels that I hang out with to start texting me all kinds of crazy, crazy things to do in and around the Parcheesi game. And it took on a life of its own. Talk about taking on a life of its own. It's interesting what's happening with some of the leading universities in this country. And I've been following the comments that have been made by Harvard President Alan Garber relative to this conflict with the Trump administration. And Garber really kind of came out of the box by saying that the Trump administration brought the fight to him, meaning Harvard. And that may be one interpretation. I rather believe the issues brought forth by the Trump administration have been festering for decades, and the lack of attention to the challenges coupled with the unwillingness to address them has really contributed to the boiling point that we find ourselves in right now and leading to aggressive conduct to other students and the administration. And President Garber continues to make comments that it's curious what he's saying and how he's saying it, that is really against his best interests in many respects. So Garber actually returned to Harvard in 2011 as a provost. He was a student. He went there for undergrad. And he said the other day in an interview that he noticed the spirit of healthy disagreement from his undergraduate days at Harvard had disappeared. And he says that to him, that was a big loss. So in 2011, he's there as the provost. So one might ask, although they didn't, which I found very interesting. It's amazing how some of these interviews go down. Well, you recognize that. Well, what did you do about it? Well, the answer is nothing. Why? Because that is really sticky business. That is very hard to change this culture. You have to go tweak admission standards. You have to go tweak and ask questions and be probative of people's ideological beliefs, of gaining a better understanding if there's a willingness of them to think outside of themselves and have a culture, a landscape, and an environment at Harvard where it is open to free and unrestricted debate, that we can disagree and we can cordially debate issues there. Interestingly, Garber said that's not what he found when he got there in 2011, that students were reluctant to do so. So I'm curious how many classes they offered at that point in time to try and foster that mindset, to try and encourage students to engage in those types of debates, because they're so important to a free and open society, and that we are better as a society if we do this without the risk of all kinds of nasty human conduct and behavior. So he's there from 2011 up until the time of October 7th. And it's obvious from his own words that they did not learn much and they did not do much. Because he says that this anti-Semitic behavior, although he knew that it existed on the campus of Harvard, it wasn't until October 7th that he recognized how deep-seated it was. He must have been blind. Everybody else did. And during the pendency of time that he was there, in fact, Harvard themselves discriminated in admissions. The court says so. They reduced standards for some to include offering remedial math, when the best and the brightest in the world were fighting tooth and nail to get into the oldest educational institution in America, one that is renowned around the world. So they spent a lot of time focusing on other things obviously, to the detriment of this. Their leadership had repeatedly been removed, reluctantly, I might add, for not being true to academic standards. What does that mean? It's a nice way of saying they were cheating. They were engaging in plagiarism. And when caught with their hand in the cookie jar, the administration there tried to explain it away and make excuses for these people, all the while tens of thousands of students watching this unfold, where this administration refused to engage in accountability. And it wasn't until outside sources brought this to the forefront and started putting pressure on them. It wouldn't escape news cycles. It kept going and going and going and going. And what happened? In almost every case, the individuals themselves voluntarily resigned in order to save face. And they were rewarded by staying on the staff at allegedly the finest learning institution in the world. So we kept a cheater. We kept someone that plagiarized to continue to instruct students about how best to conduct themselves while at Harvard and in life. Perfect alignment. Those dots connect, right? And meanwhile, the whole notion of meritocracy went away. It was frowned upon. And we embraced this equitable outcome theory, which we were told is going to save the planet. It was going to be the kumbaya moment for us, that everyone would end up in the same place. But what we didn't talk about is, how were we going to achieve that? How was that going to be achieved? And in the end, what's happening in the friction point right now, although the Trump administration doesn't come with clean hands in the way that they articulate this, because they want to make it combative all the time when it need not really be combative. But when you drill down to a granular level of what the education department is even saying, is that to Harvard, I think it's simply this: your actions and the manner in which you conduct yourself right now do not comport with constitutional standards. You have policies and practices and procedures within this organization that are constitutionally deficient. And you continue to mislead and not tell the truth about all of what it is that you're doing. So we, meaning the Trump administration, would propose the following. So they know that that Harvard has repeatedly had their hand caught in the cookie jar as to not treating everyone equally that applies for admission there. President Garber says that these requests of what the Trump administration is looking for is problematic. The means of achievement of getting us back into alignment, and he admits a lot of what the Trump administration is saying is in fact true. But the remediation is where he's having a problem in achieving it. And in a recent interview, he highlights two provisions, and I'm going to read them for you. And he says that these are very problematic for Harvard. As it relates to admissions, all admissions data shall be shared with the federal government and subjected to a comprehensive audit by the federal government. Does that sound that onerous to you? You have a university that has a history of having constitutionally deficient admission standards, favoring some and not others. The Supreme Court came out in a case talking about Asian students there. How's the best way to remediate that and bring about a comfort level with the federal government is what? Data. What do you have to hide? If you're making the investment there, if you're changing your ways, you got to be able to prove that there are outcomes that are meaningful with the strategies that you've developed to come in alignment with constitutional principles. Seems pretty straightforward to me. I mean, as it relates to a starting point on negotiation as to how that information is actually handled, that could be an additional talking point. But the means of achievement here to see what the outcomes are is something that's a deal breaker for Harvard. What are you hiding? There's been a couple of different studies that have revealed less than 3% of the faculty are actually conservative in nature. The vast majority are either left or far left. There's a smaller proportion of instructors at that university that fall in the middle and would be considered left-leaning moderates, which means in many cases that they probably have a problem in their hiring practices as well. And this is not Newell Norman's opinion. Garba himself admits to it and says that it's a problem, that we don't have that diversity of ideology that we should have on this campus. Why? Doesn't want to talk about that. But just know for certain that we have it and it exists. So the Trump administration proposed the following. All hiring and related data shall be shared with the federal government and subjected to a comprehensive audit. So if we want to find out whether or not you're doing anything meaningful to actually perpetuate more ideological balance within your organization, how else would you do it? Would I just call Dr. Garber and say, hey, Doc, Donald Trump here, just check it in. Want to know how things going as it relates to increasing the amount of diversity of ideology amongst your faculty? Are they still teaching anti-Semitic principles? Are they still teaching hate for America? Are they still teaching the hate for Western civilization? What do you think, Doc? Give me a brief synopsis of where we are. And we should just rely on that. Meanwhile, we're sending $8 billion, $9 billion to this university of your hard-earned tax dollars? No. Every grant, everything that goes with that, and every ability to find out whether or not implemented strategies to try and address a problem requires a what? Financial audit, an operational audit, an audit of some type to determine whether or not you are hitting the goals that you set out to accomplish, or you're just giving us lip service. The way I interpret this, and this is my opinion, is that Harvard has been a masterclass lip service provider. And they want to continue that. They want to tell you what they think you want to hear. They don't want to share the data. In fact, in the case of the Asian students, they fought for years to try and get that data. You thought you were getting codes to nuclear bombs in getting that data. Why? Simply because they knew they were guilty of what everyone accused them of. And they didn't want to have to say it. And do we really believe that this is going to change? Do we think for a moment that the culture of this organization is going to change overnight? No. The only way it will is through transparency. And that's the purpose of these audits. And that's what they fear, transparency. They want to do what they want, when they want, how they want, but they still want to have the privilege of your tax dollars. I don't believe for a moment that they're putting their arms around meritocracy. Not for a singular moment do I believe that right now. In fact, they're playing games as to how they're going to call the DEI office that was called the DEI office before. They're wordsmithing this to death as it relates to all of these Ivy League institutions because they have no intention of following the law. They have every intention of continuing to fulfill whatever ideological mission that they've embraced over the last decade, and they don't want to give it up. Plain and simple. How anyone can say that they've been on the campus in a leadership position, starting with the provost, and they've not recognized the anti-Semitic behavior and the other problems that they have about not taking business, taking care of business as it relates to their leadership, who are cheaters and have no academic ethical morals, and then continue to reward them by continuing to have them on their faculty and staff. They're not being honest. They're not being truthful. And they are the beneficiaries of your tax dollars. I don't know about you, but are we getting an ROI here? Is the juice worth the squeeze? I'm not certain that it is. I am certain that there are a lot of other universities that can engage in the same studies that are being done at Harvard, that can do just as good a job with a lot less headache. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
We have been going back and forth on this piece of litigation with the Orleans Parish School Board. There's been a numerous attempts to try and settle this matter, and we're back at it again. And joining us is Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council Member, District A, to backfill exactly what's happening. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, good morning.
So one step forward, two steps back. Now I'm not sure where we are, if we're just spinning around, but so what's going on here?
Well, let's talk about all the good news, and then I'll get to the bad news. The good news is we feel like, that is the council, that we've made a good deal. And I listened a little bit to your last segment, Noel, where you talked about ROI and is the squeeze worth the juice. I would argue that if you have a lawsuit where your liability is between potentially $130 to $150 million, and you're settling for $90 million, much of which will be amortized over 8 or 9 years, it's a pretty good deal for all those involved. And so for your listeners, the deal essentially involves a couple parts. Part one was $20 million cash in hand to the school board this year. The first $10 million was part of the budget for 2025 that we passed back in November of 24. The second $10 million was passed just a couple of weeks ago because we were supposed to have that by the beginning of April. The next part was that there was going to be money this year and for the next 9 years for programming for kids with mental health issues through LCMC and a program called Thrive Kids. They were going to continue to get CSERS money for the programming that the school board uses that for, some of which goes to kids who are in jail and trying to get their degrees. And then the last $1 million was supposed to go for money for kids with economic outreach and development for their skills, and that was primarily through Youth Force NOLA. The piece that has been the biggest sticking point, and we discussed this maybe on your show a couple of months ago, is the collection fee that the city has had in this instance and for other people. And I think, as your listeners know, there's both sales tax that's remitted to the school board and property taxes. And what's happened is the city says, well, we collect and administer those funds, and we're going to hold back a percentage, sometimes as much as 2% of what's collected, as our fee. And according to the school board's calculations, they have said that fee can be somewhere between $7 million to maybe $11 million per year, which is a lot of money to divest kids of. B, the squeeze isn't worth the juice, to borrow your words again, about how much work is being done relative to what's being collected and dispersed. And C, everybody knows that's the linchpin of what's going on. So we've basically have agreed, as far as I understand, to all the monetary components of this. That does not seem to be the issue. The remaining sticking point is literally less than 10% of the whole value of the case, which is the collection fee for 2025. And what happens, in my view, in mediations is two things. Number one is you have people who have their feelings and they get upset about things and they want to relitigate the way that you've been wronged many times over the years. And my message to both the city and to the school board is it's time to get over your feelings. I appreciate the fact that people may have thought there's a settlement. People may have thought this should have happened sooner. People may be angry with press releases claiming that there's a settlement when there isn't one. But the bottom line is our job isn't to be emotional and say we're going to blow things up. Our job is to serve people, and particularly kids in this instance. And the bottom line is, from my perspective, given the fact that we are this close to home and we have a path forward for the collections for 2026 forward, what I'm pushing for is let's set aside a certain pot of money, whether that's $6 million to $10 million. We hold that back in escrow for 2025, and we let the judge or a special master or an expert decide what's the appropriate amount the city should get this year. That goes back to the city. What is the amount the school board should get this year? This goes to the school board. And then we've settled family business for everybody.
So the hope then is that the court's going to be able to resolve this collection fee, which is how much? 2%, 3%? Did we ever figure that
2%.
Out? 2%. 2%. Did we ever figure out whether or not there's any statutory authority that grants the city the right to charge a collection fee?
So the city relies on a memorandum from the Dutch Morial days that they claim allows for a collection. The issue, I think, at this point, Newell, is twofold. Number one, what is the validity of a memo from the 80s, given what the law is and needs to be kicked off and dusted off? And number two, irrespective of that memo, if we have a special master who's willing to conclude that there is something that needs to be done outside of the legislation to make the city whole for the collections and make the school board whole for the money that was voted on. That seems like the easiest answer. But the short answer to your question is the city relies primarily on a memo from the early 80s that says this is okay. And the school board says, well, that's all nice and well, but the statutory language, particularly the millage, does not have that language in it. So why are we relying on a memo? We should just look at the words that are in the law.
Joe, in the memo, does it point to some statutory authority or discretionary authority that gives that the city can do this, can arbitrarily place a fee on a collection?
The honest answer is the city gave me the memo back in late January, and I have misplaced it, and I need to get another copy of it to read what it all says, because this issue has come up again and again about the 1980 memo, and I think we just need a fresh set of eyes about what's going on here. So in fairness, I can't answer that question.
I mean, a memo is legal research, right? I mean, you know,
sure. It
doesn't have the effect of law. If it does, if it did, why have a council? You guys can just collectively draft memos.
That's right. Well,
and send it around and say this has the effect of law.
Well, of course. Well, and again, I'm a lawyer. I know you're a lawyer. And I'm not trying to pick on the lawyers when I say this, but billing for this for the next foreseeable future helps nobody, right? The school board needs money now. We need to get this liability off of our books. The judge, to her credit, spent 7 hours mediating this case a couple of weeks ago. And my understanding is literally this is the last sticking point, the collection for 2025. And if I'm wrong, anybody can correct me, but I've been working on this for the last few weeks. And I just don't understand why we're going to engage in arguments like you said. Well, does the memo say this? Does this do that? We're the legislative body. The legislature is obviously the one at the state. And the bottom line is we all just need to be grown-ups and get this taken care of.
Well, the parties that are adverse on this issue, it would seem to me they would bring forth either statutory language that says they can do it or make note of the fact that there's a lack of statutory language. It doesn't exist.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And you can't just arbitrarily impose a fee for collection. You know, I mean, somebody's got to prove their case. Somebody's got to prove that the mayor or the administration has the authority to do this.
Right. That's right. I guess this is where I am from a practical perspective. Ordinarily, I'm on the lawyer end like you are, which is what is the legal analysis and all of this. I'm so close to the end. Maybe this is my own bias by having lived this for so long, just wanting finality, is we have a path to discern that, which is having a special master sort of determine what is a fair fee. Right. Like just what is it? Should it exist? The parties agree to that in the settlement. They agree to be bound to that because they see the positive effects of settling. Then can we just solve this last issue for 2025?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you had the same thing in Jefferson Parish, but it was clearly delineated by statute of what the collection fee was going to be. And at the time, back in the early 70s, we took less in property tax millage as a result of the collection fee that we got on sales tax, not on the collection of ad valorem taxes, right? The collection on ad valorem taxes is mailing a bill and receiving it. And with lockbox technology and everything today, there's a small price to pay. You know, they image it, they deposit it, you get it in the bank quicker, you start earning interest. Actually, there's court cases now, you can't even keep the interest on the money that you are holding this money as a fiduciary. You have to disperse it to the tax recipient bodies. You know, so, I mean, it's crazy. I don't know how you get to a fee, but. So I guess the school board saying we're better served if we resolve all these issues as opposed to piecemealing this is the long and short of it.
That's what they're saying. But also, Newell, I told them I'm going to criticize them about this. They just filed a motion for contempt on the first $10 million that the city owes to them. And part of the relief that they're seeking is jailing the CFO. Well, okay, guys, like, that's great and sensational, but that doesn't solve for X. And that's really my beef here with the way this is being handled at this point is, yes, you can go all the way up to the Supreme Court. You can be right, but we're waiting 3 years for that to happen. Or we can try and resolve literally what is an $8 to $10 million dispute and a $90 million judgment and shake hands and get this taken care of for kids.
Yeah. And meanwhile, they have their own fiscal issues that they're having to dance around on a daily basis, for sure. As always, we appreciate your time, your insight, your hard work. Joe Geruso, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Noel.
Thank you, sir. That's Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, District A. He's worked hard on trying to bring this thing to an end, and we wish him the best of luck. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. A lot of texts coming in about the monologue that I did earlier. You know, about, you know, why are you picking these certain topics? Well, because they're top of the news topics. There's conflict. There's a lot of meat on the bones there as to what's happening. It's a change in culture. There are those that are trying to hold on to certain practices that the vast majority of people in this country do not support, but yet they want to be the beneficiaries of public dollars. A lot of folks are asking, why are we financing these institutions with public dollars? They're private. They set up their rules. They play by their own rules. They want the freedom to do so. So why be burdened with public dollars? In fact, Harvard themselves said that that's been a topic of conversation for them as to whether or not they want to be burdened with public dollars. The real irony here is that you never get a true story out of mainstream media because there were all kinds of conditions that were put on these universities when Joe Biden was in office and they gave him money. All of a sudden, the only time that conditions become obnoxious is if it's in place by an R. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. How do you think that we got the buy-in as it related to DEI? How do you think we got to this crossroads of the practices and the patterns that were in place to perpetuate that theory? In fact, they required a number of universities and gave them money to set up these offices in order to do so. And now we've reached a crossroads here in this country where we're saying, well, you can't do that. You can't discriminate against everybody else in order to achieve equity for others. You can't hold people back in order to advance others. That's not how this is going to work. A lot of this were conditions that they put on that money that they handed down there. Now, that may align with your ideology, but it doesn't mean it's right. Right? Then it's okay to do it. Now it's unconstitutional to undo it. Right? I mean, and that's not a good example, but we have a lot of that that's going on as well. Well, if I have the authority to do it, why wouldn't I have the authority to dismantle it? We didn't create property rights for people. And here we are caught up in lawfare in the courts trying to figure all of this out. And in the end, what this is all about is ideology. We're fighting tooth and nail every day, one bloody step at a time, in order to win the ideological warfare, plain and simple. And call it for what it is. I'm not picking on one party or the other. They all do this. The question really is this perpetuating our national interests? In a lot of cases, I don't think so. Not at all. We have so many shortages as it relates to advanced education and jobs as a result thereof. I think we should worry about ourselves first before we start worrying about everybody else around the world. Just one thought. We'll be